So my name is Cristian Giardina. I work at the University of Modena in Italy. My research interests are mostly non-equilibrium systems and disordered systems as well.
Jean-Sébastien Coe from the University of Amsterdam, and so I'll be here for a week and a half until the end of next week. I work on the quantum integrable systems in and out of equilibrium.
Okay, so there are no new ones, right? Okay, so let's move on to today's talks. The first speaker is Christian Giardina. He's going to talk about asymmetric KMT model and theory. Please.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank all the organizers of the program. It's my first time in Santa Barbara at KIT. Of course, I knew this was a nice place, but being here really, it's even more than confirmed this. It's extremely nice and extremely pleasant. Okay, so I'm going to talk about a few models for which we have dualities, and this is usually something nice, I mean, at least to start to compute things, but of course, it's an entire problem to really implement the computation, but at least it's a good starting point. And I will also mostly be concerned with a model which is a generalization of a classical model, which is the KMP-E model. So this is joint work with Gioia Carinci, who is in who is at Delft University, as well as Frank Redig, who is the chair of probability there, and Tomohiro Sasamoto. Okay, so oh yeah, I should switch on. So this is the outline that I was alluding to. The bring home message of the talk will be this algebraic approach to duality that we have been developing for a while now. And I'll try to convey the key ideas of that. And I'll try, I mean, then we will see it on a concrete base dealing with this particular algebra, the default version or the quantum version, if you wish, of the Lie algebra SU11. So from this analysis, we will get a bunch of models, which they will be called the inclusion process, the asymmetric inclusion process, the Brownian energy process, it's asymmetric version again, and the KMP process, the asymmetric version. And then, if time remains, I will discuss some application of that. Okay, so just to place the context, I mean, mostly people are familiar with models of particles. That's also because they are easier to describe. And when talking about non-equilibrium, one has typically two contexts, either the one where a current through the system is imposed by acting on the boundaries. And this is typically done with by fixing the value of, say, the density of particles at the two boundaries. And if this value is different, then there is a current going from the higher density side to the lower density side. And that's one option. The other option, maybe when you deal with an infinite system or a system on a torus, you can produce a current by making it bulk driven. That is, there is an internal asymmetry so that, for instance, the particle prefer to jump to the right rather than to the left. I just wanted also to take the occasion to mention a third possibility that we have been recently analyzing in collaboration with Enrico Presutti and Anna De Masi. That is, well, this mechanism of imposing the density at the boundaries, it acts via a birth and death process at the two boundaries with different rates. Now imagine that you act with birth on one side and death on the other side. So you are really throwing particles on one side and you are removing them from the other side. So this also imposes a current, and actually this will precisely impose the current given by the rate that you choose for this creation, which must be the same as the rate that you choose for this annihilation. But the properties of this system are entirely different than the classical one with density reservoir. For instance, the hydrodynamics, while here typically you end up with the heat equation with some Dirichlet boundary condition, you fix the density at the two boundaries. Here you will get, the hydrodynamics will be given by a free boundary problem. So you will have the heat equation on a domain which is itself varying, because of course the position, while you insert, if you allow more than a particle per site, you can always insert in a given site, say zero, but the site where you remove, this you need to have a particle. So this will be a free boundary of the problem, and it has to be determined together with the density evolution. So it's really a new chapter with very interesting problems to solve, and new techniques also to solve the problem. So for the moment we are able to do the hydrodynamics, but of course it will be interesting to go beyond that and also look at fluctuations. Okay, so to be specific, I already mentioned the KMP model. So what is that? Actually, it's one of the basic models that you can think, where now the quantity that you want to transport through the system are not particles, but it's a continuous quantity. So energy, for instance. And then, indeed, the dynamical variables are energies at each site. Suppose you have a lattice with n sites. So on each site there is a Zi, which is the energy. And the dynamics is given by the following generator, which is written here. So in words, what the system does is that on each bond there is an exponential clock to operate one, and when the clock rings, the energies of the two sides of the bond is redistributed according to the microcanonical procedure. That is, you keep the total energy, the sum of the energy of the two sides constant. So this is the energy of the two sides, I and I plus one, and you put the fraction p on the first side and the remaining part, one minus p, on the other side. And this p is uniform between zero and one. Okay, so in this way it's a random redistribution of the energy. It was introduced as a basic model for heat conduction, and in particular for Fourier law, which can be easily verified to halt in this system. So the current, the average current, is proportional to the temperature gradient. Here it's not written. In the original formulation of the model, there is another process modeling the reservoir here on the left, which is just imposing a Gibbs measure with temperature T1. And here on the right, another process imposing a Gibbs measure with temperature T2. And then it's verified the Fourier law. The current is proportional to the temperature gradient via constant K, which is the conductivity, which is found to be finite. And and the analysis of the model is performed by duality. Okay, what do we mean by duality? So I'm going to really be systematic and try to recall everything from the basic definition. So the standard definition, one can go beyond that, but this is the one in the Liget book, for instance. So you have two processes, eta and xi. They are two Markov processes which are defined on their own state space, omega for the first, omega dual for the second, and they are defined by their own generator, L and L dual. So we will say that these two processes are dual to each other, on duality function D, which goes from the product state space to R, if at every time this relation holds. So what does this relation tell us? It's a relation among expectations of this observable D. Here on the left side, it's an expectation with respect to the first process, eta. So here, it's only the first process that evolves up to time t, and xi is a fixed configuration of the second process. This expectation for eta is initialized at time zero with this given configuration eta. On the other side, we do have now an expectation for the second process, for the dual process, the xi t, which is initialized with the xi that was fixed here on the left. And the first entries of the d variable is fixed to what it was the initial condition of the eta. Okay, so it's really an exchange of the role of the two processes. And as I said, it's a relation at the level of expectation. So one could ask even for more, for instance, for a pathwise duality, which in the end amounts to having a graphical construction for the two processes. I believe that there is not necessarily an implication between the two. Well, I mean, if you have pathwise dualities, then of course you would also have this relation in expectation, but the converse, of course, it's not true in general. We will say that in particular, the duality relation is a self-duality relation if the dual process is just a copy of the original process. Okay, so in particular, the generator of the dual process is the same as the generator of the original process. And this relation among expectation, if some technical conditions are verified, that is basically we can think of the of exponentiating the generator to get the same group, then we can rewrite as saying that the generator of the first process on the first variable, when L is acting on eta, this is the same as the second process with the test generator L dual acting on xi. Okay, so concretely we will work with this relation. Okay, that's a definition. Of course, one is totally entitled to ask what it is good for, this definition, if anything. And actually, how can it be useful? So there are many reasons to claim that it's useful. In a word, one can say that generally, having a dual process is a simplification in the sense that one can go from many to few, meaning that if I want to study the correlation function of the original process, say the endpoint correlation function, this I can do with a dual process, typically just initializing the dual process with n particle. Okay, so this means that even if it's infinite, the first system, if it is an extended system, still when I look at the endpoint correlation function, I can map it to a problem with n degree of freedom. Okay, and another remark, but this is more, one should really explore more around this, is that, as I will try to convince you, duality is linked to having symmetries in the system. And of course, having symmetries is also the root of being a system integrable. So, is there a direct connection between the two? Well, that's a question, but for sure they share this common root, which is the existence of symmetries. Okay, and what I will try to present, it's an approach by which, you can have typically the situation where you have a process and you are hunting for a dual. Often this this is perceived like on a case by case, you can have dual process or not. Sometimes you have it, sometimes not, and then you ask yourself why so. And look, can also be seen the other way around, that is, how could I have an approach that produced me processes with an algebraic structure with symmetries underlying them, so that I can have duality. Okay, so I will discuss both, and this is the approach that I want to comment. So the basic ideas of the of this approach is the following. Basically, the duality corresponds to the existence of an abstract operator, which is the generator, which corresponds to the generator of our processes. This abstract operator, it's written in terms of the generator of the of a Lie algebra, or a deformed version of that. And then the duality relation, it's just given by having two representations of this of the algebra. Okay, so then the abstract object, when projected on the two representations, gives rise to the generator of the first process and the generator of the second process. The second, this is about duality. For what concerns self-duality, we rather need to use symmetries, and I will explain in a couple of slides more detail about this. So this is the general scheme. As I said, it can be one can follow a path downwards, or try to start with an algebra and going in a sense upwards. Okay.
This note, sorry, the PS point. That's a stronger form of dual. If you do a change of representation, it means you have a whole class of dual functions.
Yeah. So, okay, I will be more precise with an example now. This was my plan, but just to give the idea. But yeah, what I'm claiming here is that actually the duality function are the intertwiners between the two representations. So this means it's very strong indeed, because this means that they intertwine the generator of the algebra, and then every other element of the algebra that is written in terms of those generators. But often, at least in many of the examples that we are able to fit within this framework, we do see that this is the situation. Okay, so yeah, maybe indeed, just to explain this, I will use what is possibly the simplest example, with the aim of just showing the method, of course, not with the aim of showing anything interest, because it's so simple that there is nothing interest. But the example that I want to show you, it's an example from mathematical population genetics. There is a basic model which is called the Bright-Fisher model, the Bright-Fisher diffusion. So this is a diffusion is given by the following SDE. So this is a process. Xt is in 0, 1. Okay. It starts at time 0 from some given x, little x. And it's eventually absorbed either in 0 or in 1. And so a typical path looks like this. Here in the middle, the variance is larger, and then as it approaches the two boundaries, it reduces fluctuation and eventually is absorbed in one of the two boundaries. Okay. So this describes, for instance, the fraction. If you have a population of two types, and they evolve totally at random. That is, for instance, you start from a discrete time model and you say that the generation n plus 1 is obtained by the from the generation n by picking at random your parent. And then you take a diffusion limit of that. So you are interested in an infinite population and you look at the fraction of individuals of type 1. Then they will evolve with this evolution. Okay. And so this is corresponding to the generator this generator. Okay, so this is very well known to be dual to the Kingman coalescence. So this is a process, it's a continuous time Markov chain, so it takes value in on the integers, excluding zero. It's defined by the following generator. So it's just a depth process. You decrease the number of, actually what I'm talking here about is the block counting process of the Kingman coalescence. So the Kingman coalescence, you have, say, a population, again, which is divided in blocks, and you merge at rate one, two blocks sampled at random from the existing one at time n. So when you merge two blocks, you decrease the total number of blocks by one. So this is the transition that you do. And the rate at which you do this, it's the possible choice of sampling two blocks, which is given by this factor. Okay, so it is super simple to see that these two, so this will be the Wright-Fisher generator, and this I will call the Kingman generator. So they are dual with a duality function, which is x to the n. And you immediately see if you act with this on x to the n, well, you take the second derivative, you produce an n times an n minus 1, and you decrease by 2 degree. But then you multiply by x and by minus x square. So when you multiply by x, you get x to the n minus 1. And when you multiply by x square, you get x to the n. So you reproduce this transition. Okay. So these two processes are dual. And how does it fit this into that scheme? Well, there is the Heisenberg algebra, I mean, the classical, sorry, the canonical commutation relation. Okay. And we know that there is a continuous representation for this, for the algebra, such that, for instance, A acting on X is the derivative, and A dagger, it's just multiplication by X. And there is a discrete representation of this algebra, by which, so acting on a vector base N, this decreases by 1, and A dagger just raised by 1. So it can be checked that both these two representations, they satisfy this commutation relation. And then there is this abstract generator, which in this case is nothing but 1 half A dagger 1 minus A dagger A square. And when I go into this representation, you see immediately that it's just the Wright-Fisher generator. And when you go to this representation, and one line computation will show you that this the Kingman coalescence generator. And it also fits the other piece of information, that is the duality function is the intertwiner. So if I ask for a function that intertwines these two representations at the level of each generator, so I'm asking for a function such that when I take the derivative, I should have n times the function at n minus 1. And when I multiply with x, I should have d at n plus 1. So if I require both, of course, the solution of that is the monomial. Okay? So if I happen to know already the two representations, then basically I get the duality function for free. If this intertwines these two generators, then it will intertwine every operator which is constructed with this generator, in particular this, of course. Okay.
Sorry, one question. I mean, for the fusovite, you might be absorbed at the boundary, right?
Yes, this eventually will be absorbed at the boundary.
How is this reflected on the level of the Kingman coalescence? I mean,
okay, so let me indeed. Yeah, so I think I can just delete this. So then we also see, it could be immediately computed in 1 second, but if one wants to use the duality relation to compute something in this example, for instance, like the probability of extinction. So if I define Px like the probability of extinction, that is the probability that X eventually, so x infinity is zero, given that at time zero I started from little x. Okay, so my duality relation tells me that if I look at the expectation of the duality function where I evolved the first process, so this is xt to the n, and this expectation is started at time zero from x. This is the same as looking at the expectation of x. Now I evolve nt, and I start from little n. Okay, so for instance, I can take n equal to 1. And so, and I can take the limit t to infinity on both sides. And then here I will get that eventually at infinity my diffusion will be either at 0 or at 1. So to get this expectation, this is here on the left, this is when it's 0, I don't care, and when it's 1, I get 1. And this will be weighted with the probability to be in 1, which is 1 minus px. So this, I'm taking the limit on both sides, and I'm putting n equal to 1. So this left-hand side is this, and the right-hand side, I'm starting already at 1, and nt cannot go below 1, so this will just be x. So eventually I recover that px is 1 minus x, that t. Very well known, that is, if you start from 1, then you will never get extinct. If you start from 0, you are already extinct, and in the middle it's linear. And this type of computation, so for instance, if you want to look at another typical quantity, is the probability that you pick two individuals and they are different from your population. This is the heterozygote. So this will be the expectation. Well, you need to have one individual of the first type and another individual of the other type, which is which happens with fraction 1 minus xt. And you start from time zero. So by basically repeating, again applying duality, well, this we already know, the expectation of x. We just need to control the expectation of x square. So for the expectation of x square, I need to start with two blocks. And what they will do, these two blocks, at time t. Either they are, again, 2, or they decreased from 2 to 1. Okay. So when I use this the duality relation, well, it's again one line computation, but what you will find is that you will have the original heterozygote, which is this little x1 minus x, and it will be exponentially decreasing e to the minus t. This is nothing but the rate of not jumping from 2 to 1. And eventually, when t goes to infinity, this goes to 0, because indeed we are absorbed, and therefore we cannot sample two different individuals. I'm sorry. Okay, so...
So, sorry, just a short question.
Yeah.
Can we interpret somehow n of the Kingman coalescence in the context of population dynamics? What is the meaning of n for the population dynamics?
So in this dual process, you're looking at the process backwards, okay? And you have this n groups that merge at each step until eventually you reach the father of your original evolution, that is, you have only a single individual. Okay, I didn't want to open really a chapter on population genetics. I just wanted to show you with what it's probably the simplest example, the basic idea of the method here. So this was about duality, about self-duality. So for this we use symmetries. In which sense? Well, there is a starting point that is to recognize that a self-duality relation can be, I mean, the trivial self-duality relation, that is when the duality function is diagonal, this is just a reformulation of detailed balance. So let's look at it in this context of countable state space and a Markov chain. So I look at the duality function, which is diagonal, is this delta, and on the diagonal there is the inverse of the probability according to the reversible measure mu of that configuration. So saying that this little d is a self-duality function, it amounts to say when I act with L, that is using the first coordinate, eta prime, it's the same when I act with L using the second coordinate, okay, psi prime. So this, on the left, is the element LD, the product LD element eta xi. And on the right is the element LD transposed. Okay, sorry, DL transposed. So when we use this little d, it's diagonal, and therefore here on the left I will produce the rate to go from eta to xi divided by the mu of xi, and here on the right you use again the diagonal form and you get the rate to go from xi to eta divided by the weight mu eta. So this you reread of course as the reversible measure. This can be extended to having not a reversible but just a stationary measure. In that case you will not have self-duality but you will have duality, trivial duality between the process and the reversed process. Okay. Of course the question is how to turn this into something interesting, because if it is diagonal it's not really an interesting duality function. So I want to verify this relation, but with a d, which is non-trivial. So one option is to, well, if you happen to have a symmetry for your generator, that is an operator that commutes with the generator, then you can act with this symmetry on the trivial duality function, and it will produce a non-trivial duality function. So this you can immediately recognize by this sequence of equality. So you start from here. Capital D is defined as S times D, little d. Here you can commute L and S because S is a symmetry. Then you can use that little d is a duality function, so it's equal to DL transposed. and then you recognize again capital D. So you have proved that capital D is a duality function. And it's non-trivial if S is a non-trivial symmetry. Okay, so this was the two basic arguments. How to make this constructive, that is how you can start from an algebra and produce dual process and self-dual process. Well, here is a basic, a short summary of the scheme that we proposed. So it uses a couple of ingredients, that is, well, you start from some given algebra and you need to have the center of the algebra, that is the subset of element of the algebra that commutes with all the other elements. It's non-empty. So for instance, if you have a Casimir operator, then this is the case. And you need to have a coproduct. This is an operation that turns the algebra into a B-algebra, and it conserves the commutation relation of the algebra. If you have these two ingredients, then you can, the idea is simple. Well, on one end, I can act with the coproduct on the Casimir, for instance, or an element in the center. On the other end, I can act with the coproduct or on a generic element of the algebra, say, for instance, a generator of the algebra. Then these two, H and S, so defined, they will commute, okay, because they are defined both acting with the coproduct, and the coproduct has these properties of conserving the commutation relation. So the commutator of the coproduct is the coproduct of the commutator. The commutator of C and X is zero by definition because C is in the center. The commutator of zero is zero. Of course, to have this useful, to have a probabilistic interpretation of that, you need that the operators that you are dealing with can be read as a Markov generator, that they are stochastic. So this means, for instance, if we are in a discrete setting, this must have positive element outside of the diagonal and negative elements on the diagonal, so that the sum is on the row is zero. And this last step, then, it's really the construction from the what we call quantum Hamiltonian H to a generator, Markov generator L, has to be seen on a case by case if it can be done. But there is also for that a general procedure, which is known as acting with a positive ground state transformation. So this is nothing but, for those of you that are surely familiar, going from the Hamiltonian of the harmonic oscillator to the generator of the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. This you do via a transformation of this type.
But in many cases, that doesn't mean that the off the elements will remain positive.
When you act with a positive ground state, yes, they will remain positive. But of course, you are not guaranteed that this first step produces something which out of the diagonal is positive. Yes.
So you can always do this as a self-step, or you cannot always do this as a self-step?
No, you cannot. I cannot say that you can always do this. If you have a positive ground state, then you can do this step. But having this positive ground state, it's not for free. It's okay. So I'll show this in the example that follows, it will be more concrete. So let's.
I actually think with the structure of the center, you actually can always do this.
Sorry?
I was under the impression you can always do this due to the center. Structure of the center of the Lie algebra. I can ask about it.
Yeah, it's a question or it's a.
No, it's a statement, sorry. Well, it's a statement, but I wasn't sure about it.
Yeah, okay. So I'm happy to discuss this
but
later.
Are you saying, so of course, you can't do it for all symmetries, but for some symmetries you might be able to.
I'm saying if you start with the Lie algebra and then you start with the element in the center, you should be able to do it. I don't know about like different algebras, like the Heisenberg algebra.
Yeah, that's not clear what is in the center because it's semi-simple. So I'm not claiming that this applies to all algebra. Of course, you need to have some ingredients to start with. Let's see this example, the example of this deformed SU11 algebra. So for this, we will need q numbers. I will use this definition. The limit q going to q is between 0 and 1, and when q goes to 1, the q number is the usual number. Q number of 0 is 0, q number of 1 is 1, and then they start to be different. So here is the algebra. It's defined by these three commutation relations. There are three generators, the creation operator, the annihilation, and the number operator, if you wish. And they satisfy these three commutation relations. Here, actually, they are two, with the plus and the minus, and there is this third one. And this, the Q number of this operator, it's defined analogously to the definition of the Q number here. Okay. Typically, K0 is diagonal, so this definition makes sense. This group is non-compact, so its representation are infinite dimensional. And these are the standard one that you find on book. So they act on these infinite dimensional matrices with this coefficient. And these coefficients are precisely tuned so that you satisfy this commutation relation. Okay? And of course, these coefficients are positive, because they are square roots. The Casimir of this algebra is also well known. It's written here. And in this representation, it has eigenvalue, which are k times k minus 1. Okay, so maybe most of you are familiar with the SU2 algebra, where you will have the quantum number j, say, and the Casimir will have eigenvalues j times j plus 1. Okay, so that's the algebra. What about the coproduct? This is also standard. It is defined first going from one copy of the algebra to two copies, and it's in terms of this tensor product. So the coproduct of k plus, it's k plus and the first copy tensor product q to the minus k0 plus the symmetric operation with q to the k0. And the coproduct of k0 is just a tensor product with the identity. So it's immediately verified that the commutation relation are conserved. And then by iterating this, one extends, one can take the nth power of this coproduct, which will then produce an object that lives in n plus 1. The tensor product of n plus 1 copies of the algebra, which is then written here. Okay, so if I act with this coproduct on this Casimir, I produce an object that lives on the tensor product of two copies of the algebra, which is written here. So you start to recognize the structure of a quantum spin chain. There is a product of a creation operator at site I and an annihilation operator at site I plus 1. And here they are exchanged. And then there is this term, which actually it turns out to be diagonal, this term. So it's not really an issue. And then there is this left term and right term, which is also diagonal, because k0 is diagonal. And out of the diagonal, you have positive elements, because these k's are, as I was saying, they have square roots, so they will be positive elements. What you are not guaranteed is that the sum on the row of this big matrix is zero. But this can be adjusted, and this is obtained by a ground state, positive ground state transformation. I will discuss it in a moment, but suppose that, another piece of information is that we want to produce an extended object. So I want to go to L copies of my algebra to have a system living on L site. How do I do this? I tensor product with this coproduct of CI with identities on the left and on the right. How many I need? And then I add this multiple of the identities where this coefficient is chosen such that the basic ground state, so this EI0, this is the vector with all zeros, okay, so it's the ground state of this this case. So when I act with k minus on this vector, it's zero because it's the ground state. And thus, when this constant C, it's chosen precisely so that the lowest eigenvalue of this H is zero. Okay, that's just a convenient choice. So we do have for free symmetries out of this construction because, as I said, so this HL is obtained by doing this operation, and the claim is that this HL commutes with the L minus 1 coproduct of every single K. Okay, so I will call K plus without any indices the result of the application L minus 1 times of the coproduct on K1. And I have a K plus, a K minus, and a K0. So when n is equal to 2, sorry, where, what is n here? Sorry, there is a mismatch. So when L is equal to 2, then we already, it was by construction that this commutation relation was giving 0. And for higher L, here should be capital L, you prove it by induction that you also have this. So we have the situation where we have an Hamiltonian, which is a quantum spin chain, and its symmetries. Now, what type of stochastic processes are associated to that? Okay, so here is the ground state transformation. It's in this context, it's just an elementary algebra statement that says that if you have this matrix, which is positive outside of the diagonal, and if you have a vector whose components are all positive, and it's a ground state, so with eigenvalue 0, then if you do this similarity transformation, you will get a matrix which is now a Markov generator. Well, if you define this capital G like the diagonal element, like the diagonal matrix with elements on the diagonal which are given precisely by the components of this ground state. Okay, so explicitly when you write down this, it's nothing but this relation. And of course, since H was positive out of the diagonal and you multiply it times something positive, you will still be positive outside. And on the when you sum on each row, because G is ground state, you will get zero. Okay, so this is, as I said, the finite dimensional form of this transformation going from the Hamiltonian of the harmonic oscillator to the generator of the Ornstein-Uhlenberg process. Okay, so when we want to apply this to our context, we need to have this little g. The one that we know for free, it's not good because this will have many zeros, actually all zeros except one component, which is the one of the copy that we are looking at. So this is a ground state, but it's not good because it's not positive. However, we know that if we have a symmetry, then when we act with this S on G, then we produce another ground state. So the point is to choose a symmetry so that this new ground state will have all positive components. And in this case, it turns out that this symmetry is this S plus, which is defined here, this Q deformed exponential of this E. And this E is a product of two symmetries. I know that delta L minus 1 Q K10 is a symmetry. I know that this is a symmetry. If I take a product of symmetries, it's still a symmetry. And then if I take the exponential of that, so defined, this is also symmetry. And it turns out that the ground state that is obtained by acting with this symmetry, it has positive components, it's this, and it's also a tensor product of the basic vectors. So this will be associated to the invariant measure, which will also be product for the process that now I can construct by acting with this positive ground state transformation. And the result of that is the following process. It's an asymmetric version of the inclusion process. So it's defined by this generator. For every couple I plus 1, I move a particle either to the right or to the left according to these rates. So they look rather ugly, but maybe they can be grasped if we look at the symmetric case. So if we put back Q equal to 1, we go back to the symmetric case. So this prefactor disappears. The Q number becomes number. So this says that the particle jumps to the right with a rate that is proportional to how many particles there are on the departure site, and also how many particles there are on the arrival site. So this is very similar in its form to exclusion. Here for exclusion you will have a minus. And the interaction are different in the sense that while with exclusion particles repel each other with hard core, here particles attract each other because the more you have, then the more they want to jump one on top of each other. So if you understood the symmetric case, then this is an asymmetric version. Question, why would you not do like we always do, for instance, with exclusion, that you put a P here in front and a Q here in front so that you have asymmetry? Well, of course, you can do this, and you will preserve the invariant measure, which will be a product of binomials in this case, negative binomials in this case, but you will lose duality. Okay, to have duality, actually, this is a possible choice of the asymmetric rates to have duality. Okay, so we do know a few properties of this process. As I was saying, the symmetric case has a reversible invariant state, which is product of negative binomials with this parameter k. And in the asymmetric case, this product measure, now it becomes inhomogeneous. It's still reversible, but it's inhomogeneous. And we don't know, actually, the homogeneous invariant state of the asymmetric process. Actually, we proved that it cannot be of product form, but we don't know what it will be.
Sorry, could you preserve? Could you preserve duality if you also complemented it with a spatial inversion? If you go to the asymmetric case, just your previous slide, and you now consider P and Q different.
Yeah.
If you actually, allow for like spatial inversion, can you then preserve duality?
Yeah. No.
Not as simple as that.
No.
But it's self-duality.
No? Okay. So you are anticipating one of the results. This will be self-dual indeed. I'll come to that.
What happens on the boundaries now? You're on a finite. That is right.
Yeah.
Am I understanding?
Yeah. So for the moment, here the boundaries it's free. So if you are at site L, you can just jump back to L minus one.
I see. It's just like a wall. Nothing.
Yeah. Reflecting boundary. Okay. So this is the first process. The second process is this asymmetric Brownian energy process. So we look at this inclusion process and we take a limit of weak asymmetry. So we put epsilon minus one particles into the system and we put a weak asymmetry, which is one minus epsilon times a coefficient sigma that tunes the asymmetry. And we look at this scaling limit. Now it turns out that the generator of the ASIP scales to this generator, which is the generator of the ABAP, which is explicitly written here. So again, it might look not so easy to read at the beginning, but it's the structure is simple. First of all, it depends only on the difference of the derivative. So this interaction will conserve the sum. Okay, xi plus xi plus 1 will be a conserved quantity. And this is the drift term, and this is the diffusion term. Now, it's maybe, again, to grasp, it's better to look at the symmetric case. So we send sigma to 0. In this case, well, this will be a sub-leading term, because this goes like sigma square, and this divided by sigma, so this goes like sigma. While here, it's something order 1, because this goes like sigma, but it's divided by sigma, so it's order 1. And here, you can also expand. So if you do this, then the symmetric case is degenerator, which is more readable. And which is, again, the Wright-Fisher diffusion. So when you put it on L sites, then you have now D types in your population. And the Zi is the fraction of population of each type, fraction of individuals of each type. But okay, it's what it is. And when sigma is different from 0, you really have an asymmetric process. And it's truly asymmetric in the sense that it has a current. It has a non-zero current. This we proved. We are not able to compute this, but we proved that it's strictly positive. And yes. So I guess I should close in 10 minutes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Or maybe less. OK. Okay, so this was the Brownian energy process. Finally, the KMP process, how we land on that. So one way is this procedure, which we call instantaneous thermalization. So again, let's look first at the symmetric case. Suppose that you look at the couple I plus 1, and you act on this couple with the generator of the Brownian energy process, the symmetric one, for an infinite time. Okay, so what you will achieve? You will achieve that the energies will be distributed according to the stationary measure of the back process on two sides. And what this will be? Well, I didn't say before, but this process has stationary measure, which is given by product of gammas, gamma random variable. So when I act for an infinite time, then I will have, for the couple, a product of two gamma random variables independent, but conditioned to a given value of the sum, because the sum is conserved by this evolution. So if one looks at two gamma random variables and one looks at the one of them given the sum, then this is distributed like a beta random variable. That's a classical result. So this says that when I define the generator in this way, I act for an infinite time and I see the change with respect to not acting, then this I can rewrite in the form that I said at the beginning, that is, I keep the sum constant and I redistribute the fraction on the first side and the remaining fraction on the other side. And the redistribution law will be given by this, the distribution of this random variable, which is beta. Okay. So in particular, for k 1/2, this gives back the uniform redistribution rule of the original KMP. For a generic k, you have a KMP-like process with redistribution rule, which is given by a beta distribution. This is the symmetric case. Well, and of course, this operation of instantaneous thermalization, it saves duality, because if I have duality for this generator, then by acting in this way, I will still have duality. So I can apply this procedure now on the ABEP, on the asymmetric Brownian energy process, and this will produce an asymmetric version of the KMP with duality. Okay, this is what is written here. It's exactly the same procedure, and the redistribution rule of this asymmetric process is written here. Maybe if you look at K 1/2, That's the easiest case, because in this case, all this between card bracket disappear. And the redistribution rule, it's just exponential in the interval 0e, where e is the total energy of the couple. The same can be applied, for instance, to the ASIP process, and then you will get the redistribution of particles now with a beta binomial law. Okay, but this is what we will call the asymmetric KMP. That is, it's an asymmetric version of redistributing the energy, keeping the sum constant, and it will have duality. What is this duality? So, first result is that the ASIP is self-dual, and this is the self-duality function explicitly. And this is just the application of the scheme that I said at the beginning. So we do have a symmetry, this S plus. We do have a reversible measure for the process. We act with this symmetry on the reversible measure, and we produce this non-trivial self-duality function. The second result is now a duality between this ABEP process, and this is something that we found very intriguing, and probably we do not understand fully yet. The dual process of the asymmetric diffusion, it's actually a symmetric process, and it's again this SIP process. Of course, one wonders how is it possible that here you have a process with this parameter sigma and here on the other side. No. Well, the sigma goes into the duality function. The duality function, as you see, depends on sigma and is defined explicitly in this way. So when sigma goes to zero, we go back to the symmetric case. And so in this limit, this term within the square bracket goes simply to zi. And then you have zi to the xi I with this combinatorial coefficient, which it's precisely chosen so that it entails duality. So this is, yeah, what I'm writing here. And the same results with the same duality function holds true for the thermalization of the ABEP, which is the AKMP, and the thermalization of the SIP, which is a process where you redistribute according to beta binomial particles now. How do we understand this within the scheme that I mentioned at the beginning? Well, this is the form of this of the quantum Hamiltonian for the symmetric case. There are two representations, one discrete and one continuous in terms of second order differential operator. And when you go into this representation, it's the SIP. When you go in this representation, it's the BEP. And the intertwiner between these two representations is the duality function. This is the symmetric case, and actually also the asymmetric case fits into this scheme, but what you need to do is a non-local transformation between the BEP and the ABEP process. So if you start from BEP and you do this non-local transformation, this EI is, they are all the energies to the right of I, and then you do this conjugation between BEP and ABEP, you will turn from one generator to another. So then this way you understand, at least algebraically, the relation between, the duality relation between ABEP and SIP. But what this means physically, it's still to be understood. Okay, I think that I went a little bit over time, so it's not really time to discuss the application, so I might stop here.
Thank you. Questions, comments?
Do you have, so you have generators there. Do you have a transfer matrix, the continuous, or the discrete time process?
So in this case, not that I know. I mean, I'm not aware of integrable spin chain with SU11 underlying structure.
This was probably the second question. This is not integral.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it. If there is any integrable quantum spin chain with a super one structure, I think it would be interesting to see if it connects to this.
So this is not
but, yeah.
Other questions?
So maybe I missed something, but if I am given a Markov operator, I don't know which Lie algebra to use, and I don't know if I will succeed.
Yeah, yeah. This is also implicit in this statement. Anyway, there are some cases where you can make reasonable guess for the underlying algebra, because when you want to move particle, this you do with creation and annihilation operator. So many processes can be fitted into this scheme. But the exclusion process, the inclusion process, independent random walker, many examples from population genetics, they can all be described with this underlying algebraic structure. I like to see it the other way, that is, I start from an algebra and then I can construct processes in duality. Of course, if you give me a process and the question is to recognize its algebraic structure, this is as difficult as finding a duality function. Yeah.
Even if I give you a Lie algebra, you don't know that you will be able to do it. You need to take a special Lie algebra.
Yeah, so the Lie algebra having the ingredients that I mentioned at the beginning, so a non-empty center and a coproduct structure. With these two ingredients, I can apply
the positive Gram state.
And the positive Gram state, yeah.
So yeah. How do I know that I have one?
For the positive Gram state, again, the question boils down to the same root, that is finding a good symmetry. And again, if you have the algebraic data that you start from, you can try to find the good symmetry.
Okay, maybe we should stop, and you can continue discussions during the break and lunch. This time, let's speak again.